This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. Negotiators from the United States and the 11 other countries in the Trans-Pacific Partnership get an all-expenses-paid trip to New Zealand next week. It's a signing ceremony for the deal that covers about a third of all global trade. Signing is the easy part, of course. Then it's up to the legislatures of member countries to do the ratifying. As part of that process, lawmakers are going to try and get a handle on what this agreement actually will and won't do. No easy task, given how much ground the thing covers. There are chapters on labor, the environment, e-commerce, sanitary and phytosanitary measures. You get the idea. So, how on earth does one go about figuring out how something this big and this complex nets out? One Economist has a new report out today with one answer to that question. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson takes a look.
Peter Petrie is, well, actually a little bit giddy.
This is truly exciting for geeks, but nobody else, I'm afraid.
He's in his office at Brandeis University in the suburbs of Boston, sitting in front of a laptop that holds an economic model of the potential impact of the TPP. He and a handful of colleagues spent the better part of last year getting the model ready and inputting the terms of the agreement in all its thousands of pages.
This is the red button that makes it all work.
A dramatic click of the mouse.
You can see it now running.
We watch a mess of characters and symbols begin to scroll past the screen. The computer's fan starts to whine.
It tells you that it has 108,000 rows and columns, which are equations and variables. It tells you that it has 1.18 million data points that are not zero in that column, and it's now solving it.
How does it do that? Well, it takes all sorts of data about the economies of the 12 TPP countries.
For example, that in order to make an automobile in Japan, you need this much steel and this much energy and this much rubber.
And then adds in the changes the TPP will make if it takes effect, like reductions in the taxes charged on stuff as it crosses borders.
Altogether, it's 5 million tariff lines.
There's also data on changes to rules and regulations that can make it difficult and costly for a company to operate abroad. Trying to estimate the impact of reducing those barriers is squishier. But they're in there, too.
So we have about 100,000 simultaneous equations in the model.
And there are some things that aren't in the model. The TPP's proponents say it will rewrite rules for global trade. And while you can try and quantify the individual impact of different pieces of those rules, that mega impact, if it does succeed in that very lofty goal, Petrie says the model can't capture that.
It just ended.
So about 8 minutes after we hit that red button, the model's done. It creates a series of new files. Petrie opens a spreadsheet that shows how much the TPP will add to the size of each country's GDP and income by 2030. It shows Vietnam gets the biggest boost relative to the size of its economy. And for U.S. income?
Its effect from the TPP will be $131 billion. In that year and in every year thereafter, it raises income levels by that much. That's around 0.5%.
0.5%?
So 2030, if you look at incomes in 2030, they will be 0.5% higher than they would have been otherwise.
At which point you might be thinking, what? All this work for that?
Getting 0.5% in a huge economy like the U.S. economy at very modest investment, in other words, without spending the $1.5 trillion that one would normally spend to get that much extra income, is not bad.
So Petrie is in favor of the TPP, but he wants to be clear. There are still some costs.
Workers have to move. You know, some people will lose their jobs and find places elsewhere in the economy. Overall, the places should be there, but that doesn't necessarily solve any one person's problem.
Petrie says those job losses, about 50,000 in any given year, will be mostly in manufacturing that needs lots of labor. Textiles, apparel, some types of machine building. People who lose their jobs may have a tough time getting new ones. Maybe they'll have to retire early or take a wage cut. But over time, he thinks there'll be a roughly equal number of jobs created in other parts of manufacturing. Electronics, computers, in financial services, food processing. So those are the findings. But the trouble in trying to predict the future?
You know, the world will always unfold differently than what the models assume will take place.
Danny Rogic is an economist at Harvard.
So in a way, you know, the modelers have a perfect cover.
Roderick's written a newish book that looks at the strength and weaknesses of economic models. He says the strength for this type of model is that they can look at many different interactions across many different markets. Useful. But he doesn't want us to take them as gospel.
They give us a sense of precision that really doesn't belong there, because the fact is that there's going to be a lot of uncertainty about these numbers, even for things like the effects of tariff reductions, which we ought to have a better handle on.
Roderick says the different ways researchers perceive trade can shape the models they use. In fact, a team at Tufts University recently released their own study based on different modeling. They estimate U.S. GDP would be 0.5% lower 10 years after the TPP takes effect.
I conjecture that if politicians didn't demand them, that the economists would actually not be producing these numbers. And I think what keeps them alive is much more the demand from politicians, lobbyists, various think tanks, and the media.
Yep, that's me. Roderick says models can't give us the whole story on their own. He's written they're like a partial map that illuminates a fragment of the terrain. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.